Welcome to episode 451 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And Josh, I think, well, first of all, happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day.
And
yay,
I
America.
I think this is the first time you and I have ever recorded in the morning.
I think that this is actually their multiple first with this episode. I'm pretty sure it's the first time in 451 episodes that we've recorded on a major national holiday, like a holiday so big that it's not just government employees and bankers that get the day
right,
off.
Right.
And it's the first time that we're recording in the morning, I think. Which means instead of our usual beer, we're both drinking coffee
right.
and water. Yeah. A lot of first years. So it might also be the first time we've taken this many weeks off in between recordings. And for that, we apologize.
Yeah, it has been a while. And part of it was the summer and part of it was travel. And so I'm back and this is what we could make work, so we're glad to be back and hopefully a little bit more on schedule for a while.
Yeah, hopefully. Also kids sports, softball tournaments, a lot of stuff going on. So we did get a little bit of feedback, well actually kind of a lot of feedback in those few weeks. Actually it looks like a lot in terms of like scrolling through our notes, but it's really just one big message from Robert, I know you've been waiting for us to respond to you about this, but we're going to push this off one more week. I think we're going to get to this next week. He's got a lot of interesting thoughts around gaming and stuff. So we're going to push that for next week because we actually do have a fair amount of news to hit on today. So we're going to skip over that and jump straight into our video news. And we're going to start with kind of a big topic around the cord cutter streaming TV space. And that is that it seems like pretty much all of the major streaming services are raising their rates. And it's almost to the point of like, are they doing this together? Because they are all raising them by the same amount at about the same time. We've got YouTube TV, DirecTV Now, Sling TV, and PlayStation View all raising their rates by about $5 a month within just a couple of weeks of each other.
Yeah, this is kind of crazy. And we have all in the political arena heard the big C word, collusion. This sounds a whole lot like collusion. This is how people know of that word, a coordinated effort that is mutually beneficial between economic rivals. This is kind of crazy. I don't understand. I have a hard time believing that it's just a coincidence that this all happened at the same time, unless their source providers all kind of raised the rates on them. But how could that all happen at the same time?
Well, I like the fact that you took the other C word in there too, coincidence. I don't think it's coincidence. I'm certainly not ready to jump on the collusion theory. What I think is probably more likely is contracts for one or two of these guys came up for renewal or automatically had their built-in price hike things, as this link from Cord Cutter News that we'll have in the show notes alludes to, that a couple of the companies had their rates go up, so they needed to raise their price that they pass on to the consumer, and that the other companies said, we've been waiting to do a price hike. If we do it now that, you know, maybe, you know, perhaps it was Sling TV that had to raise first. I don't remember at this point which one raised their rates first. But, you know, if Sling goes first and YouTube is sitting there waiting to find a good time to raise their rates, then when Sling does it, that's a really smart time to raise your rates, because then you look less bad, right? You're not the first guy raising their rates and you're not the only guy raising their rates. If everybody is doing it around the same time, then you all look less bad. And that's not really collusion, because it's collusion if they all get together and say, this is when we're going to raise our rates. If it's just following another company's lead, that's not really collusion.
Sure. No, that's a good point. I guess I don't know. I can't imagine that the system, the economic system we have, doesn't reward the company that offers the service for less. Why didn't someone stick at the lower rate and see how that worked for them? I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, it may just come down to, will they be losing money if they don't raise their rates?
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, it kind of stinks. But it is what it is. I mean, rates always go up. We've seen Netflix raise their rates over the years. Companies have to do this to keep going. And the Cord Cutters article basically ends with saying, yeah, it stinks that it's going up $5, but cable companies, a lot of them have gone up $10 or $15 a month this year. So at least you're not seeing the same increases that cable TV providers are seeing. So, you know, we'll obviously continue to keep an eye on these prices. These are services that I use sometimes for watching hockey. In fact, I still have my Sling TV subscription that I need to cancel now that hockey's over. I'm not watching TV. I'm not sure why I'm giving Sling TV $25 a month. but I did check my Sling TV subscription after I saw this news, and they have not raised my rates. So I don't... This might only be for new customers, or maybe it'll eventually impact current subscribers, and it's probably different on a per provider basis here. But or maybe it's just that my subscription doesn't renew until the end of July, so maybe it will get updated by then. But right now, it shows still $25 a month for my Sling Blue subscription.
Well, I don't have any of these, and you know, at this point, I don't have any plans to try any of these unless they have some sort of introductory bargain. So we'll have to see where that goes. I do know that my HBO subscription is going to be ending, and I had mentioned previously that I'm going to be killing my HBO service through my provider. And I'm trying to use it through Hulu, but, oh, man, I hate Hulu's experience.
Well, do you like 4K and HDR experiences? I think you do, because you've got one in your living room, right?
I do.
Would you like one in your office?
I would.
Because Philips might just have the monitor for you if you're looking to have a 43-inch desktop monitor.
Yeah, I don't have room for that.
Yeah, that's enormous. I have a coworker who uses a TV that's about this size as his primary. Yeah, it's not even his only computer monitor at work, as his primary, and it's ridiculous how big it is. I don't know who 43-inch desktop monitors are for, but it would be cool. And now Philips has one that's not just 4K, but it's HDR, and it's using the VESA standards that we talked about. Man, it must have been back around CES, I think, is when these VESA standards were announced for how they would help display manufacturers market the various levels of support for HDR. And this is being marketed as the first display HDR 1000 display. And what that means is that this display will hit 1000 nits of peak brightness. And that's really stinking bright. Like, I think my 2016 Vizio M series hits somewhere in the like 550 range or something like that, which is still way brighter than traditional TVs and stuff. But 1000 is really high, really, really high. Like, that's what the high-end TVs are hitting, right? And only some of them, not even all of them, are hitting that level of brightness. Now, it's going to cost you, although I don't think this price is actually that bad. It's $1,000.
Yeah, that I think that price is that great. That's a great price for a 43-inch monitor that is 4K HDR. What's the technology behind this? Is this LED?
This is quantum dot.
Like quantum dot.
That's Samsung quantum dot stuff. It's not IPS. It is MVA, multi-domain vertical alignment. When it gets into that sort of stuff, like VA versus IPS and all that stuff, my knowledge level just isn't there. But for TVs and stuff, it sounds like the vertical alignment, whatever that even means, has been better in terms of quality and ghosting and things like that. So I think that's probably a good thing. But honestly, I don't actually know.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is from a local lighting level, you know, if you have something that's 1,000 nits, is there any bleed to nearby pixels when you have something that's extremely bright like that? If you have OLED, you don't have to worry about that. But if you have LED and it has a very precise local lighting, then that's minimized. So I'm curious, you know, a little bit more about the lighting technology of this. And I don't believe that quantum dot is individual pixel lighting, but I could be completely wrong there.
Yeah, I think you're right in that it's not individual pixel lighting, but this article that we're going to link to from Digital Trends, I don't think mentioned, having multiple zones of local dimming, like we see on a lot of the higher end LED based TVs. So maybe it is. You know, I heard all of that talk about quantum dot and how it's supposed to be really good, but because it was only in really expensive Samsung TVs that I knew I wasn't going to buy, I don't know as much about it.
Right. And
I'm
and
not
again,
buy a $3,000 Samsung TV.
Let's bring it back to the price. $1,000 for a 43-inch monitor, that's a really good price. So, even if it isn't a very granular local lighting solution, it's still a great price for a monitor. And if, you know, we don't know enough about the quality to comment on it yet. I'll be eager to find out more about this because I'm, you know, $999 is kind of a starting price for a monitor in the Mac world, right? Like that. So I looked at that price and I'm thinking, well, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, it really isn't, especially if it looks as great as I would expect that it does. So cool. Hopefully we'll see even like I want to see more standard desktop monitor sizes with this type of technology, like 24, 27 inch displays that are hitting this kind of brightness. That's what I want to see if we're going to talk about desktop monitors. And that should, I would think, would help with bringing the prices down too.
Yep.
Okay, so one last little video story. This is one of those stories that I kind of had trouble figuring out where it belongs, but I think it belongs in video. That Halo TV show that we had been talking about for, oh my gosh, it feels like 5 years now. It's called Halo Waypoint. It's not actually dead. I remember sometime in the last year, someone wrote into the show and asked us, like, what's going on with that Halo TV show? Is it dead? Because we hadn't heard about this for months and months and months and maybe years at this point. It sounds like it's not dead. 343 Industries, the game development studio behind the Halo games, came out and said, nope, we're still working on it. It's going to be on Showtime. We're in pre-production. Steven Spielberg is still somehow attached to this, but he's not going to be the director or the show writer or anything like that. But he is still consulting on it, I guess, and they're planning to hit full production in 2019. I'm not as familiar with TV show schedules and what full production means in terms of release. Like if they're in full production in early 2019, does that mean that we should probably expect it to be on TV later in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these high budget shows that are, you know, that are on premium stations, they usually wrap before they put any of the episodes on. It's different than, say, a television show that's on one of the major networks where they're still recording before they're still recording when the season starts. They're just a couple episodes ahead. I kind of famously remember a very funny situation. I think it was on ABC where the TV show with Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd, Moonlighting, would literally finish recording like the week it was being aired. Like,
oh my gosh.
They were always just up to the wire on getting that show in.
That is so stressful. Like, that gives me anxiety just thinking about it.
Right, right. So, yeah, this is interesting. I don't know that I believe it. I mean, to be quite honest, we've heard about this for I don't know how long. So I think this is a good thing for them to do. You know, the Halo franchise, there are people who are going to hate me for saying this, and I'm not on the gaming side, so I'm not, you know, feeling one way or the other about this, but I kind of feel like the Halo franchise is almost all but dead at this point because there's just so much other stuff out there that's getting attention. And this could serve Microsoft well by getting some mindshare back on Halo if they plan on continuing to build out this brand.
Well, it's all peaks and valleys, right? And we're kind of in one of those valley situations with the Halo franchise. But Microsoft did start off their E3 presentation with a video of the next Halo game. So they didn't say when it's coming. And a lot of people are suspecting probably 2020, like maybe next Xbox launch title sort of thing, which Halo hasn't traditionally been a launch title, except for the first Halo was an Xbox launch title. So maybe a late 2019 release for this and then a 2020 release for the next Halo game. Maybe that helps lead up the hype and, you know, work on that mountain climb up to that. So yeah, Halo is in no means dead, but yeah, this just needs to freaking happen already. It really might be 5 years that we've been talking about this show.
It seems like forever. I mean, was this one of the original shows that Microsoft talked about when they brought out the former CBS exec that was running Microsoft Studios? I mean, it feels like this was one of... This was back in that day when they were introducing Xbox One as the new video platform that fell on its face.
Right. No, I think that's exactly when this all got announced. And if that was during Xbox One rollout, well, Xbox One was announced early 2013 and released in November of 2013. So that's 5 years ago. So that's a very real possibility.
Yep.
All right, well, let's... Actually, this kind of smoothly transitions us into gaming news. And the biggest story on the gaming side here, I think, is some more leaks of information from Microsoft talking about keyboard and mouse support on the Xbox One. And the headlines all talk about this partnership between Microsoft and Razer. And I don't know why, like, that so many people are focusing on that aspect of it. It makes sense for Microsoft to potentially partner with a big name gaming peripheral manufacturer. Razer makes a ton of keyboards and mice, so it would make sense for them to do that just to build some hype in the gaming community for it. Will you have to use a Razer keyboard and mouse? Nope. According to these leaked documents, no. Any USB keyboard and mouse that doesn't, you know, use Bluetooth or some proprietary driver crap will work. So it's not like you have to buy one of these expensive multicolor Razer devices to game with on your Xbox One. But the thing that these leaked documents do point out is that Microsoft is working on supporting Razer's Chroma RGB lighting stuff directly inside of the Xbox development tools so that game developers can tie into these things. And what this means, you know, if you're heavily into PC gaming, then you already know that it seems like when it comes to hardware, the only thing that matters is that it has lots of bright flashing colored lights, right? I'm not even sure the game PC performance matters anymore. It's just how many colored lights you have in your computer, in your mouse, in your keyboard. And now game developers can activate those colored lights in these peripherals, and Microsoft is just planning to bring that support to the Xbox One. Makes total sense. I think that's pretty much where the Razer partnership ends. The more interesting stuff is the details around how Microsoft plans to implement this stuff, or how they plan to allow developers actually to implement this stuff. So on the mouse side, you're going to get up to 5 buttons on your mouse. I mean, some of these gaming mice have way more buttons than that, but you're going to have up to 5 mouse buttons support. Of course, the mouse wheel, whether it's going horizontal or vertical, that'll all be supported. You're only going to get 1 keyboard and mouse per console. I'm not exactly sure that I understand why. And you can do bunches of controllers, but only 1 keyboard and mouse. It seems like you ought to be able to support multiples, but they're not going to. Don't know why there.
I think that could be... you could deal with... It could be like a conflicting input issue. Maybe how do you assign a keyboard and mouse to users if you have multiple users?
It could be, but they do it with controllers.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually, one thing that I hadn't seen talked about much with this... was whether they plan to actually use the Xbox Kinect for something, like maybe make a specific Razer keyboard and mouse that uses the same technology that the controllers use to connect, so not just USB. And if they were to do that, then I think they probably could fairly easily support multiple keyboards and mice per console. But
Agreed.
Yeah, so maybe this points to them not supporting that functionality.
Well, and frankly, I'm kind of glad that they're not going down that path, because that would suggest a proprietary protocol for that specific keyboard and mouse, and that's insanity.
Yeah. No one wants proprietary keyboards and mice. Like, it's almost the oldest hardware technology in computing. We don't need to go the proprietary route.
I am pretty sure that I have some serial mouse devices with a 9-pin serial plug down in my basement somewhere.
Right. Absolutely. And heck, for me, I even used a PS2 mouse for a year, like into the late 2000s, because I thought, why waste a USB port on a mouse when I can just plug it in the PS2 port? Anyway, the other big thing that we've been wondering about is, how does this impact gaming? Because if you're using a mouse in something like a first-person shooter, you have so much more precision, and that turns into far better aiming accuracy when you're playing these shooter games. How will people using a controller, which is far less precise, be able to compete against those using a mouse? And what Microsoft has been telling developers, at least in this documentation, is that's entirely up to you, game developer. If you, Call of Duty, want to allow people to use a keyboard and mouse, then it's up to you to figure out how to balance that between those players and those using a traditional controller. And they're strongly encouraging them to take what type of hardware input they're using into consideration when doing matchmaking. And that's what I would hope to see. Like, if I'm playing with a controller, I don't really want to play a game like Call of Duty or Overwatch or something like that against someone using a keyboard and mouse, because I'm already not that good. I don't need to get extra murdered by all of these people with mice. So hopefully they will, but there are problems with that too, because if a game isn't quite as big as Call of Duty and doesn't have the massive audience, then you're just dividing the matchmaking pools even more and potentially making it harder to find full matches. So that's going to be tricky. I mean, there's lots of reasons why no one has done keyboard and mouse on a console before. That's one of them. So again, this is all leaked documentation. We still don't have any real official announcements, but all of this documentation is pointing to potentially this sort of functionality coming out with the fall update of the Xbox software. So we'll see this fall.
Cool.
Another feature that's rolled out to Xbox insiders in the alpha ring. So these are the people who are getting the most frequent updates and the most risky updates. So that's not me, because I'm not willing to really risk my Xbox. So, but they've gotten the new Xbox avatar functionality that's been discussed. Man, I think they first started talking about this last summer. It's been a long time since they started hyping the new Xbox avatar stuff. And Windows Central got a first exclusive hands-on look at how this all works and what sort of functionality you can expect. It's pretty much exactly what they had been saying. You know, way more options, practically infinite color options for everything from hair to skin color. I mean, like, we're not just talking about like shades of brown to white. You know, if you want to be green, you can be green. You know, you want purple skin, go for it. Knock yourself out. Everything is available there. But it also includes things like you can give your avatar prosthetic limbs. Maybe you're pregnant and want a baby bump. You can have a baby bump now with your avatar. There's a bunch more options when it comes to height and weight to make these a little bit more realistic. And you can even set your mood, which I think is kind of a fun little thing. So all of this is fun and cool, but the Xbox One dashboard, or whatever you want to call the OS, doesn't emphasize avatars the way that the 360 did. So how much of a point is there in all of this? Like, I never see my avatar, and no one else ever sees my avatar. So why spend a bunch of time on this?
Yeah, it is funny. The only time that I recall seeing the avatar on the Xbox One is if you were switching users. Right. And then you see the full figure avatar.
Yeah. And I guess if you go to look at another player's profile, you see their avatar. But I don't do that all that often. And I'm not just going to pull out my controller and be like, I could play a game right now, or I could go and look at all my friends' avatars and see if they've done anything different with them.
Well, the one thing that I was thinking is maybe they're also going to be rolling out some new features that do make better use of the avatars or use the avatars differently so that you would see them more prominently. And we just haven't seen those yet.
Yeah, you would certainly hope so. And it's not like Microsoft just goes off and spends a bunch of money developing new features for practically no point. So hopefully there'll be some cool new integration with that stuff that will make this stuff more interesting, because I always really liked the avatar stuff on the 360. I thought that was a way more fun way of seeing who is online and all of that. So I would like to see more of this used.
And then I could create an avatar that still kind of mirrors my physical characteristics, but without making me look totally creepy like it does now.
And maybe you could somehow, like, They'll add more accessories and stuff, and you can make it so that your avatar is only ever watching movies on his Xbox.
There you go.
That's all you do on your Xbox.
Totally makes sense. Yep.
I like it. All right. Well, another quick one here. Apparently, Microsoft is abandoning all of their plans of bringing VR support to the Xbox One. The Microsoft's chief marketing officer for gaming, a guy by the name of Mike Nichols, I'm not sure that I've heard of this person before, in an interview said that Microsoft doesn't have any plans specific to Xbox One consoles for virtual reality. And this basically directly contradicts what Phil Spencer and other people in the Xbox organization had been saying last year, especially around the build-up to the Xbox One X launch, that They were talking about how the One X would have the power to support VR gaming, and it obviously would. It's more powerful than the PlayStation 4, and PS4 has VR, so it could. They're just not. And I think part of the reason actually goes back to another story we reported on. Ooh, this must have been early this year, I think, when now I don't remember who it was that said it, but someone at Xbox said, we are looking at VR, but we don't really want to do it until we can do it well wirelessly. We don't want wires all over the place. And in most VR setups right now, PlayStation VR, HTC, Oculus, like they all have wires everywhere. And no one wants to get tangled up in wires when they're VR gaming, so it makes sense. But that's just more technology to try and figure out. And I think what they're really saying here is, we're still looking at VR, but given what we want to do with it and where we are in the console generation, it's not going to happen during the Xbox One generation, because by the time we get VR where we want it, it's going to be time for the next Xbox, which again is sounding like 2020.
So I have a slightly different take on this, and I wonder if this isn't more semantics than anything else. Microsoft has been really pushing this term mixed reality over the last year or two. And I wonder if their focus is going to be less on specifically VR and instead looking at mixed reality solutions that might be cross-platform, might not be specific to Xbox One, but might be usable on your PC, on your tablet, on your Android phone, who knows? But, you know, stuff that is just more than VR and VR alone. This statement does not preclude that.
No, and I think you're wise to say, let's look at the semantics when it's a chief marketing officer that's the one talking, right? Because when a chief marketing officer speaks, it's usually very finely tuned language to make sure that they're saying exactly what they want to be saying and not saying exactly the things that they don't want to be saying.
Yeah, I think that they're just probably setting expectations here. I don't think they're trying to do a misdirection. I think if anybody's waiting for Xbox One to be the next big VR console that is going to compete with the Oculus, it's not.
Right. Right. Okay, Richard, you fly a lot. You fly a lot more than I do. And when you're at home, you don't spend a lot of time gaming. But would you spend some time gaming while you're out in all of these different airports that you frequent?
Well, I wouldn't, but I'll bet that there are people who would. So, you know, this is a really interesting story that I saw on the points guy. I think that's where this is from. Yeah. And they're reporting the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport has some gaming lounges now, and that if you're interested in spending some of your time in the airport while you're waiting for your flight, or you have a flight delay or whatever, that you can go into one of two different gaming lounges at Dallas-Fort Worth, which are equipped with, between them, a total of 36 Xbox One consoles with a whole bunch of different games on them. And you can either play per minute, which is kind of ludicrous. That's like using Wi-Fi by the minute. Or you can spend $20 and get unlimited play at one of these lounges. I think this is really clever.
Yeah, this is super smart. I would absolutely consider doing this, especially if my flight was delayed. Like, why not? I love to do this. It's a way to relax, and airports could use all the help they can get in getting people to relax.
Yeah, absolutely. So, now, when I go to an airport and I travel, I have credit cards that give me access to different lounges. So, for example, when I'm traveling Delta, I can use my American Express to get into the Delta Lounge. If I'm traveling internationally, I have a number of different cards that would let me into the International Lounge. I'm wondering if this doesn't kind of give some of those typical airline lounges some impetus to do something similar, to put some entertainment, gaming console type devices in some of those lounges as well. You're already paying to get in there. So, you know, you're kind of already paying for this. Now, one of the things that this post on the Points Guy points out is that this is not your typical lounge where you're going to have food and drinks and stuff like that. This is really just for gaming. Think of it kind of as a, I don't know, modern day arcade, I guess.
Right.
So, you know, this is not going to take the place of a typical lounge, but I like this idea. And the company Gameway that's doing it is kind of trying it out here and thinks that they might have a recipe for entertainment in other airports. And I think it's a fair point.
For sure. You know, the thing that I get a kick out of on this article is it's surefire not a video game website. And you know this as soon as you click on the article, because it's an article about Xbox One consoles in an airport, and their big giant image at the top is an Xbox 360 controller. Whoops. Oh, well, we'll let that slide because they gave us such great news. All right, so we always finish off the gaming segment with Deals with Gold and Games with Gold. Deals with Gold is really slim pickings this week. Not a lot out there. Go and check it out, obviously, in case there's something you've been waiting for. But let me caution you, because usually around this time, around early July, early to mid-July, Microsoft does a huge summer game sale. It's usually not quite as big as the one they do at the end of the year, but it's close. They might not, because they just did a big one for E3, but the last couple of years, they've done a huge sale in July, and that lines up with, you know, Steam has been doing their big summer sale on PC, and PlayStation has a big sale going on right now. It's just a time that makes a lot of sense to sell games for cheap, because there aren't many games being released in the summer. So this is the time to dig into your backlog of games and really make it an even bigger backlog of games that you might not ever play, but they still want you to pay for. So be on the lookout for that if there's something you've been waiting to drop down in price before you purchase. But also, because it's a new month, we've got new Games with Gold. The one carryover from last month up through July 15th on Xbox One, you can still get that Smite Gold bundle if you're looking to play a new MOBA on your Xbox One. But the new games all month long on Xbox One: Assault, Android, Cactus. This feels like they just picked three nouns and threw it together as a title.
Like those Amazon passcodes that you would create for a while.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know anything about this game, but it's free, so go in and check it out. The weird one in terms of timing, July 16th to August 15th, Death Squared. This is a fairly popular kind of indie co-op puzzler game. If you're looking for something to play with other people, definitely worth checking that one out. And then the 360 games, which are also backwards compatible and playable on your Xbox One, are Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. That's kind of a ridiculous name, because it's not the final Virtua Fighter game, so why would they do that? That's for the first half of July, and then for the second half of July, Splinter Cell Conviction. The Splinter Cell games, great stealth action games, so check that out if you've not played Splinter Cell, or if you have and just want to play it again anyway. So there you go. And that is like more and more evidence that they might actually be releasing a new Splinter Cell game for Xbox. There's been so much Splinter Cell stuff this year, but no actual Splinter Cell announcement, and so many people want a new Splinter Cell game. So hopefully, maybe this means something soon, but if they didn't announce it at E3, maybe not. Maybe just getting our hopes up for nothing. All right, let's take a quick dive into other industry news. We mentioned back on episode 447 that DC Comics was announcing something called DC Universe, and at the time, they told us almost nothing about it other than that it would include access to 4 exclusive new TV shows, basically, because this is a monthly subscription service from DC Comics. Well, they've fleshed it out a lot more over the last week or so. It's not just those original shows. They're also going to have a bunch of extra, like extra feature type videos, making of that sort of thing. They're going to give you access to a lot of their back catalog, which is huge. You know, they've got the Batman animated show from the 90s, which is maybe the only other DC property that I've really loved in my life. I loved that Batman show when I was a kid. But they've got old Batman movies. It feels weird calling them old, Richard. They're from like the late 80s, early 90s. It doesn't feel like we should be calling them old, but that is kind of a long time ago at this point.
I thought we were trying to forget those movies.
We should be. They were pretty bad. Pretty bad. Yeah. So you're going to get access to some of those types of movies and cartoons and things like that. And then, of course, access to comics, but not everything. That you're going to get access to a curated list of modern and classic DC comics. So no idea what that list is actually going to look like and if it's going to satisfy DC comic enthusiast enough to actually sign up for this. So there's still 2 pieces of critical information that we're waiting on. When is this actually going to be available? We don't know. It's just later this year. And how much is it going to cost? Don't know. But it's an interesting, you know, cross-media sort of subscription that makes sense from a property like DC Comics that has comic books and movies and TV shows and so much other stuff to share, you know, that we've seen, you know, these bigger properties start to do, start to offer things where they've got to reach into so many different areas. Why not offer their own subscription service? You know, you look at Disney/Marvel, and for a long time, they were putting all of their stuff, all of their movies and TV shows on Netflix. And then they thought, wait a second, why don't we just make our own streaming service? So we've got Disney working on their own streaming service, and they're going to slowly pull all of that Marvel stuff over there. And it just, it makes sense. And especially as every company on the planet, it seems, is trying to switch to a subscription model for whatever it is that they sell, that we're only going to see more and more services like this.
Well, I think the power here is the mixed media aspect of that, right? Like, much like what's being rumored that Apple may come out with at some point, and much like what Prime is already doing, you're getting multiple services bundled in for your subscription fee. Prime gives you music and video and magazines, and this is kind of doing that same thing. And it probably, I would imagine, because I look at it this way, it probably softens that blow of the subscription fee, like yet another subscription fee, because you feel like you're getting a lot of value out of it.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that's the key for these things. All right. At the top of the show, we talked about streaming TV services, and we talked about the 4 big ones that everybody knows. Here's one you might have never heard of, Fubo TV. And if you're like Richard, you've probably haven't heard of it, because it's primarily geared towards sports enthusiasts, people who want to watch a lot of sports. It's got access to, you know, the Fox properties and the CBS properties, you know, things like that. So you get access to a lot of different things for $35 a month. And the reason I wanted to bring them up is they just announced that they're doing right now 4K streaming with HDR on a couple of the Fox channels, just Fox and Fox Sports 1. And why that's so cool right now is In the US, Fox is where you go to see World Cup soccer being played. So if you sign up for Fubo for $35 a month, you could be streaming these World Cup games in 4K with HDR, and that's pretty awesome. But you better have a fast internet connection, because they're saying that it requires a 30 to 40 megabit per second stream, which is actually like more than twice what Netflix requires for 4K streaming. So I'm not exactly sure what technology they're using. Maybe they need to talk to Netflix about what they're doing. But that's pretty exciting. That and like the thing that I really like about this is, if Fubo, this company that a lot of people have never heard of, is starting to do 4K, then maybe some of these other guys like Sling and DirecTV and all those guys can also start to do 4K. And maybe these online streaming TV services have a feature that traditional TV doesn't have. And maybe people start dropping their Verizon Fios and their Comcast services for these guys, because, hey, I can watch it in 4K if I'm on Fubo or on Sling or something like that. And you're only giving me these 1080i streams at best on my cable provider. Mm-hmm. So that could be another reason to look at switching.
Interesting option. I have seen the tile for this in the store, and I really didn't know what it was. So very cool.
And when you say in the store, I assume you mean on your Apple TV?
On my Apple TV. Yeah.
Because unfortunately, this isn't on Xbox. Fubo's on Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV, Android TV, Android, and iOS. So hopefully maybe on Xbox One, but it's not there yet.
Well, interestingly, none of the consoles.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it's not on PlayStation either. I'm not sure what PlayStation has, if they even offer many of these other guys, because Sony has their own streaming TV service in PlayStation View. I wonder if they offer Sling TV, DirecTV Now, and YouTube TV and those guys. I'm not sure. I should check. I've got a PlayStation. I could look.
You should totally do that.
I should. All right, Richard, that's it for our news. What's been going on in your entertainment center over the last couple of weeks?
Well, surprisingly, my Xbox One is getting a whole lot of use now.
Oh, yeah? Like, you're just watching tons of Blu-ray disc?
No, gaming.
What? Gaming?
But not by me.
Oh, well, that explains it.
So, a friend of ours is staying with us for a while, just moved into the area and is getting started with a new job. And so we kind of reconfigured the guest room a bit, and I put the old TV in there. And I'm like, you know what? I should probably maybe put the old Xbox in there. I haven't used it in a while. When I bought the Xbox One S, the Xbox One went into my office with the idea that at some point in time I would use it for software testing, stuff like that. And I really haven't been, so it's been just sitting in a cabinet, dark and alone, all by itself, nobody using it. So I ended up going and putting it in his room, and he's been getting good use out of it. I had to delete a whole bunch of the free downloaded stuff that I had been putting on it, so we had some room to download games and play. And the other thing that we were finding is that he wanted to use his own headset, and it was the original Xbox One, and they don't sell the Microsoft audio adapter for that anymore. Or if you can find it, it's crazy expensive. And Turtle Beach has one that costs twice as much as what the original Microsoft product cost. So now I realized, well, I hardly ever use the console in the living room as a gaming console, or in the family room rather. And you brought to my attention that the new controllers have the headphone jack right on them. So I swapped the controllers, and I have the original Xbox One controller now in the family room. He has the Xbox One S controller with the original Xbox One, and it's all working great. So thank you for that suggestion, Josh. That ended up working out very well. I don't know if you knew you were suggesting that, but that ended up being the solution to my problem.
Well, another solution for anybody who's stuck in a similar boat is Microsoft makes what they call the Xbox One chat pad. It's a little keyboard, a little thumb keyboard that you can plug into the bottom of your controller. And it also does all of the same things that the stereo headset adapter did. You can plug a standard headset in. It's got the volume controls. It's got the mixer controls. It's got a mute button. It's really good. And it's $33 on Amazon right now. And It's the headset adapter and a keyboard, which makes, you know, typing obviously way easier. So that's what I would also recommend.
Cool. All right. Well, another thing that I dusted off this week was my Media Center PC.
What? Why?
So I was having some problems with my Apple TV, and I didn't feel like rebooting it. So I'm like, I'll just switch inputs and see if I could watch this thing from Plex off of my Media Center video library, because I had all of my Plex recordings indexed as part of the content on Media Center way back when I was using Media Center to watch the videos, and it failed on me. It had all kinds of problems trying to play the .ts files, and it shouldn't have problems playing those because, well, I mean, a lot of people end up actually creating those types of files when they want to play content on Media Center.
Right.
So I don't know what was going on there, and I didn't give it enough time to try and troubleshoot it, but I did for maybe about half an hour have a moment where I'm like, oh, I really miss this experience. And I had the recorded TV HD app, of course, and how much I like that. It really is nicer than the native Plex experience, just because it everything is kind of all in one place, and it's familiar and it's easier, and I miss it. I really miss it. But
yeah, it's nicer than almost everything that we currently have, even 10 years after the last version came out.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I have been watching some TV over the past couple of weeks. The Westworld season finale was about a week and a half ago, and it left me completely confused, as from what I read, it did with most other humans. One thing that I will mention, no spoilers, but if you watched it and you didn't watch it through to the end of the credits, go back and watch it through to the end of the credits, because it has a great kicker. There's a last scene on there that kind of harkens back to earlier scenes from the series, and it was unexpected and interesting, and presumably might have something to do with what we see going on next season. Also, I'm now pretty deep into Archer season 4. Always enjoy that show. I was watching some sports ball over the last couple of weeks because, of course, World Cup, and suddenly America becomes a fan of the football and starts watching soccer games that they would otherwise pay no attention to, but World Cup. So Iceland, quite surprisingly, was in the World Cup, and I wanted to track their progress and watched their games. They played Argentina. They tied Argentina, which was kind of a surprise upset. Mm-hmm. But then they lost to Nigeria and to Croatia. And I watched all of those, and they were kind of fun. And I was having problems getting them to come through on Fox for some reason. I don't know why. So I ended up watching them on Telemundo.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they were covering some of those games. So there you go. I also watched Jurassic World, kind of in as a refresher before I watch the next heavily panned Jurassic movie. I'm sure we won't go to the theater to watch that, but at some point in time, I'll probably see that, maybe when it's available as a rental. And I've been catching up on Nashville because that is back on. And unexpectedly, and I don't know why unexpectedly, because it's summer and this happens every summer, Big Brother is back. So that's 3 hours a week now.
Oh, my gosh.
That just started last week while I was away. And I was away, and this is a tie to my entertainment center, believe it or not, but I was away down in Florida to observe the SpaceX launch of one of the resupply missions. And that was just absolutely phenomenal. And while I was there, I took my Super Zoom high resolution camera down, took a whole bunch of pictures, and then came back and immediately wanted to see them on the big screen 4K OLED display. And they looked beautiful.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was really cool. Really cool. I will eventually get a bunch of those up on a library. I tweeted and put a couple out on Instagram, but that was just an amazing sight and such a cool thing to experience.
Yeah, you've done a lot of really awesome things in your life, but I don't think I've ever been as jealous of any of them as much as I was about this trip. Like, this is so cool that you got to do this.
It was. And I am going to be on next week's episode of the Ritual Misery podcast, and we are going to talk a lot about why I was there, how I was there, and how other people who are space kind of fanatics like I am could potentially do something very similar.
Cool.
All right. That is what I have been up to in my entertainment center. How about you, Josh?
Well, I was also on vacation like you were. So for an extended weekend. So I didn't do well. Actually, that's not true. One of the nights decided it was just my wife and I. So it was actually super relaxing. And we would get back to the apartment in the evening and go like, yeah, what do we want to do? And one night we thought, let's try and watch a movie. I took my Xbox just on the off chance that the streaming would work. So one of those nights we decided, let's try and watch Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, I think is the last one, because there's a new Mission Impossible movie coming out and it looks cool. I love those movies. They're a whole lot of fun. And I don't think I saw Rogue Nation. So we started to watch that, but got super tired and just went to bed. So I haven't actually really seen more than like 20 minutes of it, probably. And the next night we tried to watch, I don't even remember what it was, but the Wi-Fi was not working well at all. So we gave up after a few minutes of constant buffering. Not a lot that I've watched in terms of, and actually, surprisingly, you've watched more World Cup soccer than I have. And I actually enjoy World Cup, but just haven't made the time for it this year. In terms of gaming, I spent a lot of time playing Detroit Become Human, finished that, released our podcast episode about it. I don't apologize for releasing a 3 hour and 18 minute podcast. It was a great show. It was a great game. Anybody who's interested in story-based video games and who has a PlayStation should play Detroit Become Human and then should go listen to our full spoiler cast. It is the type of game that our podcast was made for. So many different branching paths, so many potential endings, such great conversation. So go and check out Detroit Become Human and episode 26 of Story Players once you've finished the game. I also picked up, and I don't even know how to pronounce this. I think I mentioned it on the last episode that it was coming, Nier Automata. Automata. I have no idea how it's pronounced, but cool Japanese game from Platinum Games, published by Square Enix, was released on Xbox One. It was either last week or the week before. I pre-ordered it because it was cheaper if you pre-ordered it. Played a little bit of that. It's a really cool game, really fun game. Not entirely what I expected, but very cool nonetheless, and apparently has many different endings, requires multiple playthroughs to really get all of them. And so far, I mean, I'm only like an hour and a half in, but so far I'm really liking that game. And if you want to see more, you know, Japanese action-y games on the Xbox consoles, you should maybe consider buying this, because that's how we show companies that we want these games, is by buying them when they actually release them. So that's one of the reasons why I did that. And that's it. I don't have any hardware tweaking. I don't have any other TV shows or anything. Although, you know, Jen and I, we drove past a town on our trip that was like Lake Odessa or something like that, which made us both think back to Heroes. And Jen was like, maybe we should watch the first season of Heroes again. That would be fun. That was such a great season.
The only good season.
I'm not willing to go that far, but it's absolutely the best season. I don't think we actually will, because we don't actually watch TV together anymore. Partly because she just doesn't watch TV. So that probably won't happen. But we at least, you know, dreamed about watching Heroes again. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook, too. Facebook.com/TheDMZ. Richard, I already plugged the latest episode of Story Players. What's going on with your other show, Home On?
You did. So rather than plugging an episode, I am going to plug our summer giveaway. I teased at this last week, and I want to give everybody an opportunity to participate in this, because I think more than just those who listen to Home On might have relevant experience here. We are going to be giving away an Insteon hub, and to participate in the giveaway and get a chance to win that hub, all you have to do is send in your best digital assistant fail story. So if you've had something go horribly wrong or just crazy amusing in the way that your digital assistant honored your request, we want to hear about it. And the best story, and Josh, I want your help on this. At the end of the month, you and I will go through the stories and pick the one that we think is the best, and that's who's going to win the new Insteon hub.
This will be fun. And I'm glad that you're promoting this here, because people who maybe are just curious about the smart home might not have any of these types of hubs, but they probably do have these voice assistants. So this would be a great way to expand into the smart home ecosystem by getting a free hub. So
exactly. Cool. So you do not have to have a smart home specific story, anything specific to using your digital assistant and it not behaving the way that you wanted it to. Send in your email message to homeon@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Cool. I cannot wait to read these. This is going to be a lot of fun. All right, well, and you can also enjoy this show. We normally record this live when it's not a national holiday and we're just trying to fit it in between travel and cookouts and barbecues and pool time and all that stuff. Normally, Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll tweet about it when we record the show live, and hopefully we'll see you there, because that's going to do it for episode 451. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.